This episode of Radio Labyrinth is produced by Wendy Muller, Sean Hall, Mike Spittler, Andrew Hopkins, Jonathan Wilson, and Keith Tate.
Two Faces Radio.
One of the programs which you hear daily on many of these mutual stations begins like this.
That's all I needed. Good cup of tea. Superheated infusion of free radicals and tannin, just the thing for heating the synapses.
Now, first things first. Be honest. How do I look?
Different.
Good different or bad different?
Just different.
Am I ginger?
No, you're just sort of brown.
I wanted to be ginger. I've never been ginger. And you, Rose Tyler, fell all good you were. You gave up on me. Oh, that's rude. That's what man I am now, am I? Rude. Rude and not ginger. I'm sorry, who is this?
I'm the doctor.
He's the doctor.
Well, what happened to my doctor? Or is it a title that's just passed on?
I'm him. I'm literally him. Same man, new face. Well, new everything.
But you can't be.
Harriet Jones. We were trapped in Downing Street, and the one thing that scared you wasn't the aliens, wasn't the war. It was the thought of your mother being on her own.
Oh, my God.
It's time for Radio Labyrinth with Tim Andrews, Jeff Leboff, Stephanie Swain, Autumn Fisher, and sometimes effing Ira Malkin.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 144 of Radio Labyrinth. This is Tim, and I'm joined this week by Eric Von Hessler from the Von Hessler Doctrine, who is my boss. But on this, I can put him in his place.
Absolutely.
And also English Nick, who is an English guy named Nick.
That would be right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Someone like that.
Here we go. We're going to... Oh, hey. Where did that come from?
Oh. This is a theme show.
Yeah. Doctor Who.
And I'm 10 years old again.
You're 10 years old again?
That's when I watched it.
Doctor Who returning to television on Sunday, moving from Saturdays to Sundays. Sunday, October 7th, we get the brand new Doctor Who.
Now, when you say moving to Sundays, do you mean here in America?
On BBC America.
Or on BBC America.
Yeah,
okay.
BBC America.
The BBC. Yes. British Broadcasting Corporation.
So we are going to be talking about some classic Doctor Who, the revival seasons of New Who, and the upcoming season 11 featuring Nurse Who.
Did you say New Who?
New Who.
Yeah.
New Who.
That's
New
what.
Who.
Love that chocolate milk.
Yeah. It's not really milk.
Yeah, it's more of a water.
Chocolate water.
Yeah.
Is it real? I don't know.
You Who.
I don't like it.
You don't like you?
That may
like
be
you.
Controversial right off the top, but I'm a different kind of guest.
But we don't do controversy on Radio
I don't Lab, like you. I know. All you do is swear.
That's not true.
I'm not going to do that, but I'm going to tell you that I'm not a fan of You Who.
When we record Radio Labyrinth, we don't just turn on the mics and go, fuck, shit, piss.
Look what's happening right now, though.
Well, I'm just telling you, we
You're
don't do that.
You're sneaking it in.
I heard it was a bloody blue show.
Bloody blue show.
Bloody's in the Bible, bloody's in the book. If you bloody don't believe me, bloody have a look. As we're talking about a British show, I thought I'd sneak that one in.
What's that from?
It's from my mother. Basically.
Yeah, it's from Caroline Parsons.
She always said that when we were a kid and that word would slip out in conversation.
What word? Bloody?
Bloody. It's a mild curse word.
Is that a big curse word over there?
Oh, you just say it. No, not really. You could say it, probably say it on the air over there.
What about the C word?
Oh, yeah, you don't want to say that.
Why? I mean, you hear that all the time.
Yeah, but I'm talking about a conversation with my mother.
Oh.
Yes. His mother, I'm guessing, had no rhymes that the C word were involved with as he was
Hang
growing
on, so
up.
So let me ask. You guys normally, you let the cursing fly on this show normally.
Yeah. Normally.
So if I wanted to say the C word.
You could.
You cunt.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. I can't believe I'm associated with such.
Yeah, the pimple cream people are going to come down hard
pimple,
on you.
I can see my pimple cream accounts.
Yeah, they're drying up.
They're drying up, which is exactly what you want them to do because you have fresher, cleaner skin. And everybody should get their rugs cleaned by Zero Res.
Absolutely.
So I tossed that in.
You should always be watching your X1 platform and get your business Wi-Fi from Comcast.
You see, this is just off the top of his head.
Or if you're looking for a Kia, Jim Ellis Kia in Kennesaw.
All right, you stupid.
The newest location.
That's enough.
Hey, we might have 5 listeners outside of Atlanta.
That's right.
So the funny thing is I listen to tons of podcasts and they swear.
Yeah.
All of them swear. But they'll have sponsors and national sponsors, not just the hey, you know, we'll send you a box of food. And you
yeah, can- that's usually the thing with the podcast is enter code Labyrinth.
Joe Rogan.
And you'll get your
chicken wings.
Who wants a snack box? Who wants to subscribe to a snack thing where a box of snacks come once a week or once a month?
Yeah.
It's absurd, isn't it?
No, they come. You get two a week.
Two boxes?
Yeah. Because I signed up for Blue Apron.
Yeah.
Because my wife.
Now, Blue Apron's a different thing. That's
ingredients.
That's an actual meal.
Yeah, well, you have to make it, though.
I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about those boxes that just have snacks in them.
Oh, yeah, no. I don't, okay. Yeah,
and they're good for you.
Yeah, that's right.
And people, they sign up and they subscribe for snacks as if you can't get them any place you want to on the way home.
I didn't get this month's snack.
Some people get the edible, what they call the edible arrangement.
Yeah.
You get the fruit.
Well, I like
looks
that.
Looks like a flower arrangement.
I know, but it comes like once a week.
It's on a stick. I don't know.
Who the hell wants that?
I'm just saying there's probably a podcast somewhere giving away edible arrangements.
When I was a kid.
Which was a long time ago.
A long time ago. some people would, this was in the South anyway, they would be subscribed to Charles Chips. And they would get
Charles Chips.
So did I, but I never thought, I was a kid, so I used to love to go over to the house where they had this huge tin.
It was a metal tin.
Yeah, of Charles Chips.
Yep.
And as I grew up, I thought, God, that's stupid. They would subscribe. These guys would drive like UPS trucks full of Charles Chips. They'd come into the apartment complex and there'd be five or six different places. And I'd be like, that's going to be my friend.
You're talking about crisps, aren't you?
Yeah, chips. Yeah, yeah.
Well, there might be some British people who listen to this because it's a Doctor Who. Show.
Aren't they going to lose their entire audience?
Don't they know they're talking about crisps or potato chips
or fries?
Chips or fries.
That's right.
We're talking about potato chips.
That's right.
And
crisps.
As an adult, though, I realize that's just very stupid because the availability of potato chips in my lifetime have always been, they're pretty available, not difficult to find.
But you couldn't get that tin.
Okay. How many do I need? I've got one tin. Now do I need seven?
I'm getting a giant bag of Middlesworth barbecue chips in about a week.
What's Middlesworth?
Middlesworth are a central Pennsylvania staple.
I thought it was a Lord of the Rings thing.
No. They've been around for a long time. They're cooked in lard, and they have three different kinds. They have plain, which are delicious.
Yeah.
Barbecue, even more
My
delicious.
Goodness. I mean,
sour cream and onion, which I don't go for.
No. You don't like that, huh?
No, I used
Might
to.
As well have dip.
The only kind of flavored potato chip I really like, other than the barbecue from Middlesworth, are the Wise onion and garlic chips.
They're good. Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Have you ever taken French, what's it called?
French onion dip?
French onion dip. But you get this, what's the potato chip called?
Sour cream and onion.
Yeah. So you take the sour cream and onion.
Yeah.
And you dip it into French onion dip.
It's a little redundant.
Mind blower.
It is blunt. Yeah.
Your life will be changed.
Isn't there a sour cream and chive too somewhere on the market,
I
believe?
There's a chip. There's every sort of flavor of chip now. You can buy those wrap chips. Have you seen those at the gas station?
I don't go to gas stations.
They have.
I don't shop for food at gas stations.
I'm assuming that you've been in a convenience store in the last 5 years.
When you're pumping gas sometimes?
I send my driver in sometimes.
Okay. Well, they have wrap chips, which are like
Pilot.
Fetty Wap ridges and
yeah.
All
what are wrapped chips?
No, the wrappers and their cartoon wrapper faces on these bags.
Oh, I saw a story about that.
Fetty Wap.
Okay. Are they good? They taste good or they taste like...
I tell you, I don't buy them because I'm a little...
Yeah, and you're worried. You're racist.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I understand.
I ain't eating no bag of chips, no.
You know, you supporting that lifestyle?
Yeah.
For heaven's sake.
If you ever go to the UK, you can get them some... I think Taste of Britain up in Norcross, which is a little store that sells a lot of British candies and stuff like that.
Toblerone?
Walker's Crisps are the primo chips, potato chips from England.
Walker's.
Yeah.
What are those graham crackers? You know what I got?
What you got?
I got one of the, what do they call them? Digestibles.
No, digestive.
I like a digestive.
What is that, a cookie?
It's
They're
a biscuit.
Delicious
yeah,
biscuit. Biscuits.
Well,
yeah.
Cookie biscuit.
They're
the word
graham
biscuit
crackers.
Is used a lot. It can be a lot of things, biscuit.
I just always, when I bought them one time just because it said, digestive.
And also, you get bacon. You got bacon flavored crisps. Different flavors.
Isn't that a rasher? What's a rasher?
A rasher of bacon is the piece you cook, right? The cut.
A rasher is what you put it in. It's the dish.
Oh,
it looks a little bit like a boat.
Oh.
You know, you've worked in restaurants. It's that little boat
that you
put.
You call them a rasher.
Well,
we
I, don't know where
them
you're,
boat dishes.
I don't know where you're from, but that's a rasher.
What do we put the lasagna in?
That makes
in a
sense,
boat dish.
Because people say, would you like a rasher of bacon?
Mm. Yeah, and that's what it is. It's a rasher. Yeah, now you know. See, you guys all learn things from me. Have you, in all the different ways of... things that biscuit can mean. Have you ever known anybody used it as a sexual term?
Yes. Yeah.
I find that to be disgusting.
With the word whisker in front of it?
Whisker biscuit?
Yeah. Well, it's disgusting. That doesn't turn me on at all. The idea of a biscuit is not sexy at all.
From that classic early 80s movie exploitation, sexploitation film, Angel?
Don't remember.
She doesn't
know it. She's a student by day and a hooker by night.
Really? And she had a whisker biscuit?
No, there's a line in it where one of the students finds out she's a hooker and goes, "Come on, Molly, show us your whisker biscuit."
Wow. A grown man, one time, years ago, was on one of the radio shows I was on, and somebody else was on the show was a pretty woman.
Yeah.
And after the show was over, he said, "Well, I bet you she's got a nice biscuit." I thought, wow, that is not sexy at all. That really makes me feel creepy inside.
So it's dry and flaky?
Yeah. I don't think of biscuits as a thing. I mean, I like them in their place.
The lady that played Angel in that movie was called Donna Wilkes, whoever she is.
What the hell?
Susan Tyrell was in it. Rory Calhoun.
You know,
Cliff Gorman.
Rory Calhoun. That must have been a peak for him.
For
Dick Shawn, John Deal.
Dick Shawn.
Do you remember Dick Shawn?
I know who Dick Shawn is.
Yeah.
Dick Shawn was the son who wouldn't stop crying in Mad World.
I don't remember.
There's Dick Shawn.
Yeah, there he is. He died of a heart attack on stage, I believe.
Yeah, he died.
I believe, and the audience thought that it was a joke, and so they started laughing.
He was a transvestite. Though.
Really?
He's also in The Producers, the original The Producers. He plays the guy playing the Nazi. The singing Nazi. Mm. Is he Hitler? Is he playing something?
Yes.
You ask me if I know Dick Shawn. I'm throwing his most famous stuff at you, and you don't seem to be aware of it.
To me, his most famous is the transvestite who, when the serial killer and Angel tries to kill him, he goes, "I'm not a woman. Look, fake tits." And he thinks.
And that's the that's more famous than it's a mad.
Well, to me.
April 17th.
Buddy Hackett was great in it.
Yes, he was. And so Dick Shawn was the son. I think it was.
These two guys from Cleveland are fucking a dead owl.
Was it Ethel Merman? Who was the lady?
Ethel Merman's in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone's
she was
in
the
that
son.
Movie.
He's the son, and he's crying. And when you see him, it's the 60s.
Yeah.
So he's the cool kid with his girlfriend, and it's like ultimate like old guys writing about young people in the 60s. So you flash to his apartment, and it's him, and he's wearing like a Speedo, and the girlfriend's in a bikini, and all they're doing is dancing.
Go-go dancing.
And then he goes after, he's crying, he loves his mother.
Who won the money, I forgot?
Nobody did in the end. Remember, they're all going for it, and then they're on the side of that building, and then it opens up, and the money flies all over the people.
Oh, that's
down
right.
In the fountain.
Spencer Tracy, was it his money?
Spencer Tracy was the detective that was supposed to bust them for trying to get it, but then in reality, he had his own plan to get the money, and then they all start chasing after him.
Isn't that weird? When I was a kid and that would come on television, I would watch it over and over, and I don't remember any of it.
Oh, no. Come on. You remember when Buddy Hackett is in the plane? The guy, the pilot, something happens.
What
he's
happened
drunk.
To the caper film?
Bacchus is in the plane with him. All right. What is this? Can I just ask?
Hang on, real quick. Dick Shawn died April 17th, 87. He was on stage at the University of California, San Diego's Mandeville Hall. He was playing, he was a politician, and one of his cliches was, "If elected, I will not lay down on the job."
Right.
And then he falls face down.
And everybody laughs.
They think it's a joke. And then they administer CBR, and then the audience is asked to leave.
Right. CPR, not CBR.
CBR. Yeah, CBR. Is
CBR.
Good. Breaker, breaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Citizens Band Radio.
Now, you brought up Jim Backus. Have you ever heard this? I just got to ask. This is one of my favorite things ever.
I think you played this.
It's a cozy table, isn't it?
And champagne, my dear.
You've never heard this?
This is probably on an LP, right?
It's like 45.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Is there a point to this?
No, I just want you to hear it.
Like it? I like it too.
Delicious.
What year sure as this.
I like it too.
Let me guess. It's gotta be.
Yes, I do.
62.
Like
58.
59.
Delicious.
Yes.
Really good.
Is there a chorus or
no,
just keeps going on like that?
The song is called Delicious, the laughing song.
It's what we call novelty tune. You know, can I say something?
Sure.
I downloaded this podcast and it said the reason I downloaded it is it said it was a conversation about Doctor Who.
Right.
And I haven't heard a damn thing about Doctor Who other than you told me.
Well, at the beginning.
At the very beginning, yeah, you did, yeah,
it's called Radio Labyrinth. We go around and around until we get there.
Is there a way to get out?
Yeah, here we go. Here's the trailer for the brand new season of Doctor Who.
Oh, it annoys me. This is one with Glorious.
I believe.
Ooh. A lot of good noises.
Yeah. Good special effects. Looks like Star Wars, to tell you the truth.
Harry Potter.
I'm the Doctor. When people need help, I never refuse. What do we do?
Why are you asking her?
Because she's in charge, bro.
Says us. Let's get a shift on.
Why is that song?
I don't know what it is.
I think it's the Hillary campaign ad.
You know, to me...
You see what I'm doing here?
Do what I can.
What, the mouth thing?
Yeah, she does an Elvis sneer. That's part of her thing.
Doctor Who? Yeah.
I think she's doing a David Tennant impression.
You know, it's funny you said that. Because he cocks his eyebrow up?
He does that, but the way she's delivering the lines, too.
I have a feeling she's going to be more Matt Smith.
Yeah.
The goofy wizard who? I'm...
So tell me.
Trying to keep an open mind.
Are you going to watch the first episode?
Of course I'm going to watch the first episode. And I have an open mind.
Okay.
But I will be surprised if I end up liking it.
Why?
Because at least the way that they have... First of all, I don't care if it's a woman. It's fine. I don't see anything wrong with regenerating into a woman.
See, that's the only problem I have with it.
I know, because you're a misogynist.
Right.
That's why you call it Nurse Who.
Yes.
Yeah. But I'm a deeper kind of thinker.
Sure. Oh. I understand. And, you know, I'm surface level all the time.
This is, you know, it's science fiction, and what really matters is the stories. Mm-hmm. And I don't care. But the way that it has been advertised up to this point has, like, glorious, you know,
It
feels and sounds like a Hillary campaign ad.
Right.
And I'm not being political with that. I'm just saying that doesn't belong in science fiction. So the way they've been pushing it, we may find out that that's just a tactic and the actual show isn't all social justice being shoved in your face. The problem is they destroyed the last 2 years of Peter Capaldi with exactly that, smacking you in the face with social justice. So given that track record and the way this is being pushed for the last couple of months, I'm really looking to be let down. And I honestly, I'm not just saying this as a disclaimer so I can trash it at some point. It does not bother me at all that he regenerates into a woman. That's fine as long as it's the right actress and as long as the stories. That's the thing about Doctor Who. It's the stories.
Right.
I just watched one from the 70s, I believe. Yeah, because it was Tom Baker, but it was a movie. It was an hour and a half. Destiny of the Daleks. Story. I mean, the story ends up, I mean, spoiler alert, but the Daleks end up fighting another robot race that's trying to take over the world, and they've actually figured out a way of peace because they're both so advanced that their computers will always know what the other side is going to do before they do it, and they do something in the other computer, so they actually end up in a stalemate because neither side can outmaneuver the other.
Why did the Daleks hate
Doctor? Hold on. So my point is, that's a really cool science fiction story.
Yeah.
So if there was a story that was that good and interesting, I don't care. And as long as the actor, actress playing Doctor Who is convincing, I'm not sitting around like Archie Bunker.
Why they got a broad doing it, eh?
But they destroyed Peter Capaldi, who could have been one of the best doctors. His first year, he was cold and indifferent, and it was awesome. And then,
He was mad. The character was mad because he was old.
He was. That started that way, but he was... I don't know if you ever see Mummy on the Orient Express, but I mean, he's just great in it. And mm-hmm. and if they would have just stayed with that doctor, but obviously there was some pushback from somewhere. He's too mean. He's too unlikable. And then, you know, before you know it, he's coming into a scene, riding on a tank, playing an electric guitar with Ray-Bans, and they completely changed him. And then they started adding really smacky in the face social justice, which is just
with
annoying.
With the newer companions.
Before, even.
Even with Clara?
Even when Clara was there, they started, his speeches were very, get a lot of stuff like, is the future all women? We can only hope so. You know, just a lot of stuff
like that.
Which has nothing to do with science fiction. Look, science fiction often does deal with real world problems and tensions. So that's appropriate, but it's the lecturing.
Star Trek always did.
Yeah, but it's the lecturing that just got out of hand. And you know it's coming off of college campuses. It has that feel to it, you
right.
know? And so that's what I'm being annoyed by, and that's what I'm worried about. With the new,
that's because you're an old white man. That's why.
And there you go. And so is.
So are you?
Yeah. No. But yeah, the point is, you watched it when you were 10,
and
you were the second generation to watch it.
To me, Doctor Who was a thing from my childhood. I haven't kept up with it all these years. You know, I did see the last episode of him, and then the new chick coming in. But
when you were a kid, was it something that was on every week? You were excited to see?
Oh yeah, yeah. It was definitely. My parents weren't that into it, so it was always a kid's thing.
Yeah.
For me. And then I was talking about off the air, the Longleat Safari Park near Warminster in Wiltshire.
Was that English? Can you say that again? What was that?
Longleat Safari Park.
Longleat.
It's where Lord Bath lives. There's a huge stately home there.
Oh, of course, yes.
Oh, but yes, anyway, Lord Bath.
You can drive in.
Always stunk, which is a strange irony. Yeah.
You can drive your car through the enclosures of lions and tigers and monkeys.
Real?
Yeah,
real animals?
And the monkeys will get on the baboons to get on your car and eat the windshield wiper rubber.
Oh, really?
And,
that sounds fun. And, can you run them over?
No, you
can't.
Do that.
Can you chase them down?
No, you don't want to do that.
No, okay.
And so they had when I was a kid, they built this brand new maze, and next to it, I think it started and went from like 74 to I think 2003, a Doctor Who exhibit. Oh. So you could go there, and as a kid, like, what's the main guy who ran the Daleks?
You talked the guy with the
guy,
head.
I was just watching
him.
Something Ross. No.
No. Why am I blanking on this? I just
leader
last
of the Daleks.
Night,
Tim, come on.
We know who he was. He was the guy. He had the wires hanging out of his head.
They had they had the replica of that there, and it scared me to death. I remember screaming. And the Daleks too, and the cybergs.
I feel like an idiot.
Davros.
Cybermen. Sorry, Cybermen. Yeah.
Oh, you're thinking of Cybermen.
Yeah, the Cybermen.
Not the Daleks.
But both, they're all there.
Okay, you know, here's something I noticed when I was watching Destiny of the Daleks. At least back then.
Exterminate.
Because you'd see that Davos, and he's like sitting in a Dalek, right?
Yeah, so he's basically a wheelchair.
He's basically, yeah. And, but I realized, because they move around, I think he's just moving his feet.
Yeah, yeah.
And they make it seem like part of the effect is that his body rocks back and forth. But once you look at it and think, oh, he's just doing that with his feet like the Flintstones, it becomes hilarious.
Yeah, I don't know if the actual Daleks were remote control, if there was actually a dude.
I thought they all had a little alien inside of them.
Well, that's the real point. I mean, in reality,
yeah,
yes,
I'm
they have
saying,
a
like,
race
there a
of
person inside.
Gross-looking and gross-smelling things.
Are they cybernetic, or were the Daleks built for them?
Here's the thing with my love of Doctor Who. I'm not an expert on the canon. Quite often, because I watch them out of order.
Uh-huh.
I'll watch a Tom Baker Doctor Who, and then I'll watch something from the reboot, and then I'll go back and watch, you know, the
Where
second.
Where do you find the Doctor
lot of
or Tom
on,
Baker?
A lot of them are on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to watch out for quality. Some of the quality isn't good, but every once in a while, like the Destiny of the Daleks was actually really good quality. So I often, even though I've been watching Doctor Who for a long time, I'm not good at keeping canon and facts in my head.
Right.
So I'll learn things that I had no idea about. I'm not an expert on the arc of the story. I've heard so many different explanations as to how old the Doctor is, anything from 700 to 2,000 years. So a lot of origin stories I don't really know. What I do know is that the Daleks just want to rule the universe, and they're willing to kill anything, and they have no emotions. And as with everything, it all started on Gallifrey.
Gallifrey, and that's why they hate him.
Yeah.
And also, I might be wrong.
The Doctor!
I might be wrong, but isn't one of the Daleks' arms like a toilet plunger.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like a toilet plunger. Yeah, and they
suck you to death.
Yeah, but you know what's funny is they're the, and I was thinking of this actually last night when I was watching this movie. I want to know who was the guy or gal, the very first writer or set guy who conceived of the Daleks, because it is a really an original. You go back to those things didn't exist. It's a very odd.
And you didn't see much of it anymore after that.
According to Wikipedia, the Daleks are a fictional extraterrestrial race of mutants. Principally portrayed in the British science fiction television program Doctor Who.
Yes.
The Daleks? That's what they are.
The Daleks.
The Daleks were conceived by science fiction writer Terry Nation and first appeared in the 1963 Doctor Who serial The Daleks in the shells designed by Raymond Cusick.
Okay, well, we got the two guys then, the writer and the designer.
Yes, exactly.
Man, I've forgotten there were movies, Doctor Who movies. Yeah. I remember seeing them in the theater.
Well, you know, a lot of the people don't realize with the reboot, they think that the last Doctor was the last Doctor that was on the show. Mm-hmm. I think in 89 was the last season before 2005. But they had periodic specials.
Specials, as they do in England. Christmas special.
And there's a one-time Doctor in there, I think in the 90s, with a movie. There was a movie that, and I haven't seen this movie. It may have been a Christmas special, I'm not sure. But it's American-made, and it was made in Canada, but it's a Doctor Who movie. Uh-huh. I haven't seen it. And there's a one-off Doctor there. Yeah, there's a couple of one-offs.
John Pertwee and Tom Baker were my Doctors, because I was a kid at that
who's
point.
John Pertwee?
He was John Pertwee doctor.
He was the one before Tom Baker.
Okay.
He's the guy
silver-haired gray guy.
Kind of looked like Capaldi's Doctor.
A little bit,
yeah.
And then John Pertwee, and in the UK, he went on to have a great kids show called Wurzel Gummidge.
Well, the first...
Where he was a scarecrow, and he had different... He'd live in the barn, and his friend was Aunt Sally. She was a wooden doll.
Yeah.
And they would have... Would you like a slice of cake, Aunt Sally? And it was tea and cake. And then he would have different heads he would put on for different things he had to do.
This is the early 70s after he left?
Yeah, he'd twist his own head off and put another one on.
That's frightening, I would think, for a Wurzel, child. Was there blood everywhere?
Because he was made of wood and straw.
Okay, that makes sense.
Wurzel Gummidge, where is it?
Which one?
Straw everywhere.
He has own language, too.
Which one of the original Doctor Who incarnations is your favorite?
I think...
Before the reboot?
Mm-hmm.
I think Tom Baker, personally.
The scarf guy.
Yeah, I think Tom Baker.
Scarf guy.
Well, he's the one that wore the long scarf.
You know.
I wish I could interview him, because the question I always have, there's a couple of questions, because the one I watched last night, that movie, was Tom Baker. And one is, when you decide that to design that Doctor Who outfit, but the one he had on is like a winter getup.
Right.
It's got that heavy jump. And I'm thinking, it can't. There have to be times where you just stink to high heaven from sweating, because they're always out in some cave somewhere.
Yeah, British countryside somewhere.
So that's the number one. Number two, he had to constantly be tripping over that
scarf.
Off of that scarf, and they had to cut it because it was on the ground.
Was he in that final episode with Capaldi, or was it the a facsimile of the first Doctor?
The new actor playing the first Doctor. I think it was the second time that guy had done that. He'd also appeared in Day of the Doctor, which was the one a couple of Christmases ago where a lot of the reboot Doctors were there, except for Christopher Ecclestone, who just refuses to play the game on any level whatsoever.
That's the one where John Hurt played Doctor.
Played a Doctor. And he's considered part of the canon as a Doctor. I think he was only in that. And I don't know if
the good news is that the female Doctor will eventually regenerate back into a male.
Or a dog.
No, I don't know. I think it's going to be whatever. They got to go through everybody first, right? So it has to be minority next. Once you get on this track, it ends up being...
Has there ever been a black doctor? No.
No.
That's got to be next.
Yeah, I'm saying it could be female, black, something like that. I think it's going to be a while before we get back.
Do four seasons, probably.
Or they'll run it in the ground. I think she signed... They've at least Chibnall, who's the guy who's the showrunner now, has signed, I think, for 5 seasons. I don't know how hooked up in that she is. She's a good actress. I just don't know if she's going to be good at Doctor Who. Once I break through the It's Glorious and there's that horrible thing, it's a quick trailer where the glass ceiling shatters and she goes, oops.
Like,
please.
Yeah, she was great in the show Broadchurch.
Really, yeah. She was fantastic.
She's a good actress. Yeah. She also, there is a very good nude scene of her you can find on Mr. Skin.
I was going to say, what are you, the new Mr. Skin?
Where what show?
It's a movie that she does a nude scene.
Early on.
He's just trying to feed people who are going to say that the only pushback on this Doctor Who is because men can't handle an empowered woman by bringing up the fact that you know a place where you can see her nude.
Yeah, bringing her down.
What are you, 16 years old?
I think it's cool.
Hey, if you want to find Tom Baker, well, not these days, but a couple
nude?
Years ago. No.
Yeah. There was a Playgirl spread I saw him
in. He was
the
voice that would intro and the skits on Little Britain, which is a very funny sketch comedy show from England. So he would be the voice, and he would say all these off-color things that were written for him.
By the way, before we go further without touching that, Tom Baker was in Day of the Doctor, but he did not show up as a doctor. At the very end, he showed up as the curator of the museum.
Oh, that's awesome.
That they were in. So
Day of the Doctor. Is that the Canadian one?
No. The Day of the Doctor is the one that I believe that had John Hurt in it. I get confused.
That's the Capaldi introduction one, isn't it?
Is Capaldi there yet? I don't know. It's Matt Smith is in it. David Tennant is in it.
They all meet together.
They all meet together, and it might already be a Capaldi. Anybody listening to this is like, this guy's an idiot, and I am. I'm just a fan. You know what I mean? I'm not like, yeah. I take it in, and if it's a good science fiction story, I'm into it.
Okay.
But I have a very scattered brain when it comes to that. So I can't remember if that was a Capaldi. I think it was a Matt Smith story, Day of the Doctor.
Most of the time, Doctor Who stories are standalone stories, so you can pick and choose.
Yeah, more so in the reboot, though. But back in the classic Who, they would have very long arcs, 5, 6, 7 episodes. Yeah.
Well, because Roger Daltrey liked to take a break
in
the classic Who.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I thought it was on PBS here, and I didn't see it much when I was a kid, but I would see the commercials for it. You know, on PBS, I shouldn't say commercials.
Promos.
But I'd see promos for it, and I thought it was Roger Daltrey from The Who.
The music scared
me. And it was called Doctor Who. What?
That scared me when I was younger.
I think it used to be on Sunday nights in the UK, I think.
It was on Saturday nights, most of the time.
No, over there.
Was
it Saturday?
I think it started for years and years and years. It was on Saturday nights.
You know, my memory's kind of dodgy when it comes to the early 80s. You know,
yeah, I know.
Like
I know
some people,
knows.
You know, it's just hard to remember things and who was where. And
let me tell you what worries me is beyond the social justice stuff of this incarnation that is coming soon, they've said, a lot of people don't know that Doctor Who actually started way back, first few episodes, which I don't even think they exist anymore because
you can't find them. They used taped to, over.
Taped over. Sometimes they'll find one in Australia because they used to send film of this video, like what do they call it, kinescope, to other places.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll find something every once in a while. But I think the very first ones are gone. But it was, in fact, conceived as a children's show.
Mm-hmm.
The Doctor would just basically, in a more adventurous way, be like Mr. Rogers and teach you how something was done. Mm. And I think that only lasted 6 or 7 weeks, even episodes, when they turned it into the beginning of what it is now, a real science fiction show. And Chibnall, I think his name's Chris Chibnall, the guy who's the new showrunner, who's written 3 or 4 episodes of Doctor Who up to now. But I looked at it and I thought, this looks wizardy, the trailer. And there's 3 or 4 companions, and it looks like a kid's show. And then I heard that he said, well, it's going to go back to being a children's show, like referencing, because a lot of times you do that, you know, reference some old iteration.
Right.
You know, Capaldi, I think, referenced,
Pertwee.
Pertwee. I think that there was a little bit of reference there. And he's acting like, we're doing a reference to, you know, it was really a children's show. But it was for what, 6 episodes? In 1961, it was a children's show? The cool thing about Doctor Who, when it's done well, is adults and kids can sit together and watch it. You can watch it with your kids and enjoy it, something that you can do together as a family. When I see them now, I see the trailers and removing all the social justice stuff slapping you in the face, it looks a little wizardy.
Yeah.
You know, her get up is very wizardy, and I'm wondering if they're if they're saying, ah, the Harry Potter thing and all that, you know.
Well, that generation is, you know, and I got the Star Wars thing from the desert planet and the spaceship and all that weird stuff. You know, they're playing to that audience of kids who's grown up. We grew up at a time where you look at the production value on Doctor Who and said, okay, this sucks, but I like the show and the acting.
Right. And then, because the production, the weird get-ups were kind of like part of the fun.
And same with the original Star Trek.
But as a kid, you didn't think about bad production,
did you?
No,
you didn't care about that, no. And you knew, though.
Yeah.
You knew that it was fake. But, you know, but now you watch one of the new Star Trek movies that J.J. Abrams made, where you take the old characters and put them into all that new shit.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
I didn't like it either. I mean, the first one was an enjoyable movie. The other two were terrible.
Do you remember Ricky Gervais's ode to Doctor Who in one of the extras episodes?
Vaguely.
Where he's down on his luck, he can't get a role. They start getting him, his manager, his agent starts getting him these roles. He's like, oh, we've got some Doctor Who. And he's like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be on Doctor Who. And so, because he's been there and now he's back, you know, back. And so he flashes to this vision of him. He's this big fat bug. And he's salivating and he's just standing. It's freaking awesome. Extras from Ricky Gervais. Brilliant.
So going back, let's go through them in order. What did you think of Christopher Eccleston as far as rebooting?
Wait, are you going back? As far as you're going back? Just the reboot?
Yeah.
Christopher Eccleston was great.
Yeah.
But I like everything else. It has to do with the stories. They came out and they had, wasn't that Russell T. Davies? Was he doing?
I believe.
I mean, there was a lot of good stories. That's why. That's the thing about all these guys.
And Clara.
And a lot of people didn't like Clara.
Not Clara.
Clara didn't come along until later.
Not Clara. The first Rose.
Rose.
Rose was such a good.
And the whole, story arc. Was it Bad Wolf? That whole arc and all that. It's the stories that matter. The reason when you say, well, who is the best doctor and all that, so much of it is, was there good writing and were there good stories and the actor's good. And so he was, I think, one of the best doctors.
I love how aloof he was.
Yeah.
He was kind of a
but know. Apparently he hated the whole experience. He won't participate in any kind of thing having to do with Doctor Who.
Well, I read an interview with him and he said, you know, I did that.
Yeah. You know what? I think he'll get older and it's classic of artists that when they're very successful at something that for some reason they always think, well, I got to go on and do something new.
You fight what the success was.
Yeah, and you get older, then you realize, wow, you know, it's a lot of actors never had a situation like that where they meant so much and played a role. I think he'll regret it when he's a little
bit older. He's a good actor overall. Do you remember did you watch The Leftovers?
Yes.
Did your
my wife watched it.
He was on that. He played a priest.
Which one?
Or a minister. The Leftovers.
Oh, yeah. He's awesome in that.
Yeah,
he's a brother-in-law. He's great.
Well, there's the thing is, and this is and we'll go through the different doctors, but my brain, I have to, you know, stick
I understand.
So,
real quick, in England, the Doctor Who season 11 is going to premiere, the premiere is going to screen in cinemas, in theaters.
Well, they've gone to they've upped, it's going to look great. It's in wide screen format now.
Right.
They've got better cameras. So that's one thing that they've done where they, you know, but what I was saying about when you say which doctor is the best doctor and which is the best eras, it's like a band that's been around forever, that's had like 10, 15, 20 albums. And a band that sticks around like that, the thing is, every album may not be as good as the other albums, but with bands like that, there's always a couple of great songs on every album. And this is true with Doctor Who. The important thing is there has to be, when we look back, Capaldi became a disaster in the last couple of years, but there's still a handful of classic, great episodes. And so ultimately, this new Doctor will be judged by that as well. You have to have these you put that in there as one of the greats. And after two or three years, all you need is a handful. If there's five great classic episodes, then you've got something. Eccleston has some really great ones in his. I mean, one of my favorite Doctor Who episodes of all time is in there with the when the time thing with the guy who gets hit by the car and they're in the church and the dragons are one of my favorites. So yes, starting with Eccleston, he was obviously very good. Nobody's going to say he wasn't good, right? There's no pushback on him.
I don't believe so.
I think now it's become actually a rebellious thing to say, he's my favorite doctor, because he was only there a year.
Right.
And he's the rebel who's like, I don't do that stuff anymore.
And he wore the leather coat.
Great. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
He's that
just
was
a
fantastic.
Great actor, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's awesome.
But the two best are Tom Baker and David Tennant, right?
Yeah. Tennant, to me, I mean, if you remove the old canon and you're just starting it with Eggleston, I do believe that the best one has to be David Tennant.
Out of all? I think Tom Baker's got to be.
No, I said you remove that, the earlier ones.
Oh, okay.
Now, if you didn't watch any of the Harry Potter movies, but Tennant played a character that was crucial to the films and also the books, played Barty Crouch, who was a guy who pretended to be Mad-Eye Moody in one of the mid movies, and he's really good in that. And then I saw
he's a
that
great actor.
Became Doctor Who. He was great in that.
Broadchurch.
I watched the American version of Broadchurch too, which was good.
Is he in the American version?
Yeah, he's the same character.
Why did they do that? I don't understand why. What's
the American version called?
Broadchurch.
No, it's what's it called? Called something else. I'll look it up.
Why did they do that? I mean, these days, I watched Broadchurch on Netflix or something. Yeah. Why is it necessary?
Grace to, Point.
Why is that? Did they do it like in the Northwest?
In the Northwest, yeah.
And does he have an American accent?
Yeah.
Ah, man.
Well, he's a very good actor because even as Doctor Who, is he Scottish? He's got a really thick.
I think he is Scottish.
In
yeah.
real life, he's got yeah. a, he sounds like Connery.
Hey, lad, yes, say
he's very, very good. He's got a thick, and he's a great actor.
Yeah, he's on Jessica Jones on Netflix. Great actor.
Yeah, I've never seen
and
that.
He got great stories.
Yeah,
which matter a lot.
Oh,
yeah, he's Scottish.
But you know, there's two guys that did a really good job because they followed guys who were thought of as the best.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Davidson after Tom Baker. Tom Baker was the longest running, I think. He was 7 years. Mm. So, I mean, by the time the next guy came along then, if you started watching when you were 10, I mean, there was no other Doctor Who ever in your life. Trying to follow that was hard.
Fun fact, Peter Davidson is David Tennant's father-in-law.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that.
I did not know that.
Huh.
And he's one of the only doctors.
Oh, man. There was a show also on Saturday nights growing up called All Creatures Great and Small.
Yeah, he was in that before
he
went on there.
James
yeah.
Herriot's assistant in that.
Well, that's one of the reasons. Oh. One of the reasons that he was picked was because he was known to the audience.
Huge.
He was already
Huge.
He was already famous.
Who?
And Pete Davidson because okay. he was on All Creatures Great and Small,
yeah.
and so they were so worried about how do you replace somebody who's been there for 7 years. Like I said, you're 10 to 17. You don't know anything else. And this wasn't a time to watch reruns.
No.
You know, it's the 70s going into the 80s. And so he was already known to the audience. They brought him in. I thought he's a cool doctor, totally different from Tom Baker. And I think the same thing, Matt Smith was in that situation, right? I mean, he following David Tennant.
The story arc for Tennant was so intense. Yeah. And going from Rose to, well, there was also the older companion. I forget her name.
You're talking about
Mickey? It might have been Mickey. She was an older lady and her grandfather, and she was supposed to get married, and David Tennant's Doctor Who eventually had to erase himself from their memories
right.
so they could. That was a very wonderful story. And the grandfather who sat and waited for him. But then he becomes Matt Smith, and then you have Amy Pond. And I love that story arc as well.
Hi, everybody. This is Paul Stanley from KISS, and they asked me to read all the Radio Labyrinth patrons. Well, first of all, if you'd like to be a Radio Labyrinth patron, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/Tim Andrews, okay? And that's how you become one. Like, if you wanted to be a patron of my paintings page, it's going to cost you a lot of money. So stick to Radio Labyrinth. I swear to God, you're going to get, well, you're just going to save a lot of money. And you know what? They'll take a dollar. I don't do that. The lowest amount you could give as a KISS patron is $5,000, okay? So you're getting a really good deal from Radio Labyrinth. So let's welcome our newest patrons. That would be Ryan O'Connor. He's a nice fella. I guess he's Irish. And then next we have Sherry Dougherty. It says Doug Hurdy, but I don't want to say Doug Hurdy. I just want to say Sherry Dougherty. I think that's how you say it. Unless it's Sherry Doug Hurdy, because if it's Sherry Doug Hurdy, I don't want to be wrong, okay? So Sherry, either way. Okay, time for everybody else. Aaron Roberts. A.J. Dysart, Al McKeon, Amber Gilpatrick, Andrew Harbin, Andrew Hopkins, Brennan Price, Brian Jackson, Brooke Sizemore, Buck Monterey, Chad Shepard, Chris Coulthard, Chris Knight, see the guy on the Brady Bunch, Chris Weilert, Christopher Costantino, Colin Oman, Dan Carroll, Daniel Pitts, Darren Downey, David C. Funk, and the Funky Bunch, Dean Poole, Debbie McDonald, Denise Reynolds, Dennis Davis, Dustin Lawler, Emily Warren, Eric Malmstrom, Garrett Kemble, Herb Lamb, JB, Jeremy Truman, John Bennett, Jonathan Wilson, Jose Perales, Joshua Schiffer, Keith Tate, Kevin Stokes, Kit Beatty, Lauren Calderman, Leslie Haney, Leslie Norman, Lou Caniglio, Mark Jones, Mark Pirro, Mark Weiland, Matt Carter, Matt Talley, Matt Tenaglia, was he on The Sopranos? Mike D, Mike Hall, Mike Spittler, Nicholas Frank, Robert Calderman, Robert Haley, Ruben Aguilar, Rusty Weinberg, Ryan O'Connor, Ryan Humans, Seth Ingram, Sean Hall, Sherry Dougherty, I already said her, Stephanie Kaminsky, Trent, Wayne Blair, Wendy Muller, and Zach Pittman. Thanks, everybody. Again, if you'd like to be a Radio Labyrinth patron, just go. Where do you go? Oh, yeah, patreon.com/Tim Andrews.
Matt Smith pulled something off that's very difficult to do, which is to follow something so popular and be different and be even younger. Tennant was seen as kind of, you know, they were going with young doctors
anyway.
Yeah,
Matt Smith is very baby-faced.
When they started. And I wouldn't say that Matt Smith is my favorite or one of my favorites, but I do have a lot of respect.
Yeah.
And I also think he started to deal with some crappy writing started happening. And again, it ends up when you say, oh, who's the best doctor or whatever, it's not just the actor, because they always get actors who can do it. I hope they got an actress who can do it now. It's all about gravity, you know, like this is what I worry about the new one is when I see her scenes, I don't know if I'm believing it.
Mm-hmm.
These other, they've been really good in the reboots that as soon as the next one comes along, the doctor says something and you go, yeah, that's the doctor.
Yeah.
That, you know, that, and I don't know, and I know it's not anything about her being a woman because I don't care. I just wonder, man, you've got to be bigger than life. You got to fill that that screen. You've got to own it. I'm worried, why does she have three or four companions?
That's not abnormal, though.
It hasn't been done in a while. I mean, I think with Davison, right? He had three or four.
Yeah, so they're going to put more people around her to carry the show. That's what I'm wondering about.
But that was, obviously, that's, you know, what happened before. I don't know. Well, I'm going to watch.
Let's all watch.
I'm going to
open mind.
But yeah.
Can I tell you why I'm scarred?
Why are you scarred? Are you smarter?
I'm not smarter. I'm angrier.
Okay.
Scarred but angrier is what I am.
Hey.
What they did in Capaldi's... Was it the final? Yeah, it was the final show.
When they brought
the first Doctor back again. Mm-hmm. And with Billy,
Yeah.
I mean, basically, they brought the first Doctor back to say he was racist, misogynist.
Curmudgeon.
I mean, I'm basically just pissing on
the legacy
of the show, the people who liked it. I mean, were they just trying to take people who loved... I mean, let's remember, you know, we live in America and we know the split between Trump people and resistance people. Well, in England, they have the same dynamic, Brexit and people who want to stay.
Remainers.
And remember this.
Anti-Brexit.
And remember this. This show's been around for 55 years.
Yeah.
So a lot of the people, if you're 65 years old, you might very well be Brexit people.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are writing Doctor Who are anti-Brexit people, and they seem to be going out of their way to sort of punch the old fan base, you know, in the face. I don't understand that. Why would you bring back the first Doctor and portray him as a racist and a misogynist? It's really we're pushing this audience away because we're going for this audience.
That's what the last Star Wars did.
Don't get me going.
Which one? The Last Jedi?
Very ham-handedly gave a big FU to the fan base.
Solo yet.
Solo wasn't a romp. It was fun.
Yeah.
I mean,
The Last Jedi, it is very much the same thing. Same thing going on where I have no problem with progress. I've never had a problem. You know, the thing that you played in the trailer.
Yeah.
Why do we have to do what she says? Who says we have to listen to her?
Who's in charge?
Who's in charge? She is. Who says? We do.
Yeah.
That is just the people writing the show virtue signaling to other people who write. Because, look, break it down. The millennial audience or the Gen Z audience they want, they already don't care about women being in charge, right?
Right.
They don't have a problem with it. People my age have worked for women I know that. I've worked for women all my life.
Several female bosses.
I have never, and I've told this story before, when I came to WSB, and I'm talking to my program director, Pete Spriggs, and we're talking about the show and what we're going to do, and then the first time his boss walked in, Donna Hall, who was above him, which makes it above me, I didn't look at Pete Spriggs and go, why do I have to listen to her and yeah. And be told, because I said Jesus. You know what I mean? There's nobody.
We'll put her in charge.
Nobody needs this.
Yeah, it should be enough that this woman, we know she's Doctor Who. Yeah. She's always in. Doctor Who's always in charge.
It should be no mention.
Yeah.
It right. should be no mention. It should. As a matter of fact, they should have kept it a secret this time. That would have been the way
awesome.
To do it.
Yeah.
And then, because
awesome.
I think her first thing in the TARDIS where she falls out is a pretty cool scene. Yeah. It's a good introduction.
She makes a mistake.
How great would it have been if we had no idea it was going to be a woman?
Yeah, should have faded to black before he got to her.
Well, then they wouldn't have been able to virtue signal for 6 months.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you're right.
No, I'm saying, no, don't fade to black. Show it to us. But wow, what? It's going to be a woman? And then she falls out and then we have to wait?
Yes.
That would have been fantastic. But the way that they appear to be going, trying to move an old audience away, but I don't think these younger people will stay with them the way that, I don't know, maybe they will. And I also make myself pull back sometimes. I am 54 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, maybe a 12-year-old girl sees this and it does inspire and it does turn on. I just would hope that you don't have to be, you know, didactic, just to, you know, lecture people all the time. Just put on good shows. Just put on great, compelling television.
Everything's that way now, pretty much. Yeah. You know? There's very few things that don't do that anymore.
Well, porn. The Last Jedi, huh? Porn?
Porn hasn't gotten
porn's still very misogynist,
yes,
I find.
Thank God. That's not true, though. Porn is way less misogynist.
Porn and David Lynch. That's where we're at. That's the only two things.
Porn is dead. The traditional
porn
model.
Is dead.
The traditional
porn
model.
Have you bought that URL yet?
Not yet. But my point about
pornisdead.com.
The women who make money doing porn are women who are doing it by themselves or collectivizing and forming groups.
They're empowered. They're like the United Artists.
Yeah.
Some of our favorite porn stars from 10 years ago now producing and making movies, right?
Yes.
They're like,
yeah, well, let me just say this. I don't buy that.
No.
What?
I don't. Look, you can. When you're 25 years old and you're really good looking and you're making all kinds of money, and you're richer than anybody in your family or anybody in the town you came from or whatever, it's very easy to give interviews and say, this is actually a powerful thing, and I'm doing whatever. You get back to me when you're 47. Get back to me when...
I'm on the stripper circuit.
Get back to me when you've got a hole in your soul the size of a firestone, and, you know, tell me what's going on then, because I don't see it as an industry that you age well in.
I haven't seen it, but I've seen the preview for that documentary. I think it's on Netflix or Amazon. Oh. Life After Porn.
I've seen that.
And it's from what I can see, it's a very sad situation.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is. You shouldn't ever... And anything you do in your life that's based on your youth is going to end up sad, because unless you pull a James Dean or Jim Morrison, you're going to age out of that.
Yeah.
And you're going to have a lot more of your life is going to be when you're not that.
Right.
So it's never a good idea to identify your lifestyle as youth, because it's going to go away unless you're unlucky and die while you're young.
Or you're me. I keep on the same life after the last 20 years.
Well, you are the world's oldest teenager.
Yeah.
And still pretty damn sexy, I must say.
Thank you very much.
A little thicker than you used to be.
I love beer. I love beer like the next man.
That is a pain.
I mean, you bought The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Without being misogynist about it. Okay, all the empowerment, everything. Here's the problem with the story. So you've got one part of the story where the Laura Dern character, I can never remember the...
Dr. Purple Hair.
Yeah, the main guy, the fly boy.
Mm-hmm. Not Finn. Finn is the other guy.
Yeah.
You mean the black dude?
No, that's Finn.
Oh. Oh, you mean the guy who's in
there? I tried to say the other guy.
He's in that new movie that came out from the Life people.
Jin.
Yeah.
Jin.
Whatever his name is. He's the fly boy. He's the toxic...
He's the Han Solo.
Masculinity. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So... There's a turn in that story where he begins to wonder if Laura Dern's character is actually working with the enemy because she's not attacking.
Right.
Now, ultimately, that's another example for us men to learn that you don't always have to break things, and it's a big female empowerment story. Okay, put that aside. In order for that to be interesting, I have to begin to believe, like him, that maybe Laura Dern is working with the other side. That's what would make the story interesting, right? But as I'm watching this, I'm thinking, no, she's an empowered female. There's no chance that she's going to be working with the other side. Yeah. Or anything. Because the problem with these characters is that they're saints. They're wonderful. Mm-hmm. There's nothing bad about them ever. But Han Solo...
He was a rogue.
We didn't know. He's like, no, I'm going to take my money and run.
Yep.
And then when he shows up and
he's the hero.
And he's the hero, then there's like I thought he was a jerk who left. You had to buy into that. I never bought into Laura Dern being a turncoat or a jerk because I
we
understood.
We didn't know her character anyway. They didn't establish who she was.
One thing I knew was she was an empowered woman.
Right.
And that was never going to be played out as somebody who was negative in any way. I stopped watching the Peter Capaldi Doctor Who's, not because of Bill. I actually think the actress who was Billy was a good actress. I don't have to be told in every episode that she's a lesbian. I don't have any problem that she is.
I'm a lesbian.
I mean, they found a way to virtue signal
right.
in everything. But it got to the point where the stories weren't believable because it was always about empowerment. So there was one, this was pretty much the last straw with me, the horrible emoji one I lived through. Then there was one where the whole concept was it was a house full of young people and the house was eating the kids. They'd be sucked into the walls and the whole thing was how to get them back or whatever. But here's the thing. One was white, one was black, one was Asian, one was Sikh, one was
the kids.
It was one of each, right? So I never bought into the idea that they weren't going to be all right. I knew because I was being handed these sort of empowerment figures.
There was no sense of tension.
No sense of tension. I knew they were going to be all right. And then the writing at that point was so lazy that at the end of the episode, the house just coughs them all back up and everybody's all right. Can I make one more point before we go?
Yeah.
Because I think that the BBC, okay, they're trying to include, be more inclusive. I'm not against that. Tell more stories. The problem is the one of each concept, that in every episode there'll be one Asian, one black, one family. That is like a Girl Scout cookie box. That's not compelling.
It's a game commercial from the 80s.
Right. So, right. It's a commercial, really. So you can have every demo,
yeah.
Except it's not every demo. It's try to do social justice everywhere. What I say to the BBC or everyone else, just tell more stories. Make more shows about people who look different than,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't, that doesn't sound good, people who look different, but
no,
you know what I mean?
No,
it's like, people know what you mean.
Make more movies about Muslim women. Make more movies about Sikh families. Make more stories.
Let them make the movies.
However you want to do it. And find the great actors and actresses. The problem is this sort of academic, you know, off of college campus sociology department concept of one of each,
yep,
in every story. And every time you see an empowered figure, you know nothing is going to happen to them. So there's no tension. It all comes down to story. And that's where I leave.
Stories, mate.
So we're all going to watch it and then we'll talk about
October
it.
7th.
October 7th.
1:45.
All right, I'm going to watch Nurse Who.
I'm going to try to have an open mind, but yeah, if it's like these commercials.
I don't think I see as much of that as you do when you watch stuff, so I'll probably have a different opinion.
Well, that's because you date 20-year-olds.
So yeah, mate. Still, they're all empowered.
Yeah, mate.
They're so empowered.
Thank you guys for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having us, mate.
Hey, I love Radio Labyrinth.
I love you guys.
Hey, can I say this? Hey, it's Eric Von Hessler here, and I love Radio Labyrinth.
I'll be using that for every intro from now on.
Hey, it's English Nick, and this
Wait,
is...
Wait, hang on. Let me
start in the clear.
Hey, it's English Nick, and the Radio Labyrinth is a bloody good time.
Here's my favorite kind of thing, like on radio. Hey, it's Eric Von Hessler, and when I'm in Atlanta, I download Radio Labyrinth.
How about this one from back in 2001? Hi, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger, and you're listening on The Regular Guys. And check out my new movie, Collateral Damage. Do you remember that? I had that.
I do. Who did
that? He couldn't say
it. He did it.
No, but I mean, who recorded? Was he in? I'd never met him, so I wasn't there.
He offered to record liners, so I had him record him for Rude. and you guys.
So he wasn't in the building.
He recorded him in LA. Yeah. And he couldn't say collateral damage. And he goes, "You're listening on the Rude Ride Home." Who is the Rude? Rude Ride Home.
I remember that.
Yeah, I wish I still had that debt. All right, guys, thank you.
Bye.
Oh, keep it canon.